Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we meet the head of a new group devoted to promoting smart growth in Tulsa. The Tulsa Smart Growth Coalition, formed earlier this year to encourage smart growth and the principles encapsulated in Planet Tulsa, the city's enacted comprehensive plan. What is smart growth? Well, it can mean different things to different people. But the big picture is to focus city growth in ways that avoid sprawl, increase density, and encourage walkability, the use of transit and bicycles, and reduces the auto's impact on the city. Mixed-use development with a range of housing choices and economics is also a big part of smart growth as well. Joining us today is Bill Leidy, the executive director of the Tulsa Smart Growth Coalition. Leidy is a career realtor and has been a member of the Tulsa Metropolitan Area Planning Commission, where he served 5 years, the Tulsa Transportation Advisory Board, where he served as vice chair, and the Land Use Task Force. He joins us to talk about the Tulsa Smart Growth Coalition today on Studio Tulsa. Bill Leidy, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
I really appreciate the invitation, and it's an honor to be here.
Tell us a little about this Tulsa Smart Growth Coalition. This came together earlier this year. What was the impetus for this?
Really, it was a process that we worked on for several months and actually rolled out our website, Smart Growth Tulsa Coalition website, in April. And then shortly after that, we started a Facebook page and opened a Twitter account. And really, it's an evolutionary thing, I think.
It's a group of people basically wanting to talk about smart growth issues?
About smart growth and about the comprehensive plan and about a new way and a new strategy on going forward on our development practices and an attempt to have a little bit more sustainable development practices and having an effect on the built environment that we live in.
Yeah. So the group has come together. You've sort of formed a formal coalition now.
We have a formal coalition. We've invited we have several different membership options. The first is an organizational affiliate member, and that is by invitation, although we're anxious for people to contact us if they're interested in joining in with us. And then we have individual memberships that really involves nothing more than just signing up for our newsletter on our website. And so a lot of people have joined in. We're excited about the growth that we've had on our Facebook page. We now have over 700 followers in just 90 days on our Facebook page. And so it's a obviously there's an appetite out there for people to band together, to unify the various organizations who are trying to make a difference in Tulsa, in their neighborhoods, and in their businesses and so on. So it's been a pretty exciting road so far.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the idea of smart growth, because smart growth can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. It can be perceived as a threat as well as something that should go forward. What in your mind is smart growth?
Well, there are no simple answers to that. And I think it's fairly subjective or idiosyncratic, I guess you could say, and it will mean different things to different people. But for the most part, I think what we view it, and Sarah Kobos, a member of our leadership council, wrote a very compelling piece about what smart growth is and why it's important. And essentially, the bottom line is it's choices. It's a matter of thinking in a new way about how we're going to move forward to create a more livable community, a safer, a more healthy community. And so there are a number of different aspects. Transportation plays a key role. By providing mobility options for people that do not own an automobile, don't want to own an automobile, can't afford to own an automobile. And for so many years, we've been a pretty auto-centric
society. Since we moved out of the downtown area, we've been a auto-centric city.
Precisely. And we haven't made investments in public transportation system. And as we continue on and we face shortages of fossil fuels that will surely come in the future, then we have to be thinking outside the box on how we're going to get people from point A to point B. So transportation is an important issue. Land use is also a very important issue that works hand in hand with transit to try to create neighborhoods that provide opportunities for people to live and work and to play within walking distance of those various elements of their life, and to get out of the dependency on the automobile, to reduce the carbon emissions, to help with climate change, and just to have a little bit more sustainable future.
Let's talk about what you mean by land use, because I think when people go to eastern cities, you'll be staying maybe at an apartment or a hotel. there'll be a little system of support within walkable distance of your neighborhood, whether it's a neighborhood restaurant, it's a dry cleaners, it's a small store where you can pick up a quart of milk, that sort of thing. And most of the time when people like us in Tulsa go visit those cities, we love doing that. But once we get home, we'd like to go back to our cars.
Well, precisely. A very good point, Rich. The Euclidean zoning that we have had in the city and many other cities, most all cities actually have been under a Euclidean zoning for some 50 years or so, provides for the number one priority has been a separation of uses. And during its time when there were a lot of factories and so on, we didn't want those creeping into our neighborhoods or near our schools where there was pollution and so on. So they served their purpose. But now things are changing, and there is a movement, not just regionally or nationally, but globally, to try to create communities where it's possible to live side by side with a number of different uses. And so there is that movement, if you want to call it new urbanism or smart growth, that looks at the big picture and says, you know, we want to have a more efficient system. We want to have something that's going to help us have a healthier society. Right now, we're so auto-dependent, we don't do much walking or exercising, and the obesity rates are skyrocketing. And, you know, so there are just a countless number of things that would really would be benefits. As far as the resistance to it or the controversy, we can't do much about that. I personally think that people are rather limited sometimes if they aren't going to consider and be flexible to think about how these might actually improve things. But people are, you know, resistant to change. So winning them over, and it's a challenge for us as the Smart Growth Tulsa Coalition to try to help educate people about exactly what it is.
Is one of your goals to create neighborhoods like that where, you know, you live in a place, there's a walkable hub within walking distance where you have the local restaurant, the you know, the sort of amenity shops that normally we would go around and drive on errands within walking distance? Is that the goal?
It is. And if you want to think of it this way, it's kind of back to the future. We had a lot of these things back in the 30s and the 40s. We had neighborhoods that had the corner grocery store and the drugstore and the dry cleaners and the barbershop all within walking distance, your church, your elementary school. And as things went along, we got a little bit more spread out, was people started moving out of the inner city and going to the suburbs. And so, yes, we would like to encourage mixed-use growth where you have the opportunity to have businesses and homes and different kinds of housing, from multifamily to single family, maybe high rise, maybe condominiums, all in the same neighborhood, in the same area.
You know, density is a real interesting point around in Tulsa, because when you talk to city leaders, they realize that the city has to grow more dense because we're pretty much hemmed in on virtually all sides, to the north from Owosso and Skytook, to the south from Bixby, Glenpool, and Jinx and Broken Arrow. There's no place for the city to grow out, so it's got to grow more dense. And yet, anytime there's a new project that is about putting in some sort of high rise to add density, there's tremendous opposition.
You're right on all counts. density, really, in 1970, Tulsa was the 19th most densely populated city in the United States. And really, you know, you think about that, that's quite something to say. 19th most densely populated city in the United States.
And you think about it, you know, beyond 51st Street was countryside in 1970.
Anything south of Interstate 44 was, you know, in the boondocks. But you know, through in one day, we annexed over 100 square miles of land and tripled the size, the geographic size of the city, and committed to infrastructure improvements and public safety responsibilities for a much larger area. And the reason that we need to increase our density is to spread the cost of the burden of public safety and infrastructure maintenance over a broader section. Right now, the city of Tulsa is larger than the cities of San Francisco, Boston, I've got a copy of it here somewhere, but about five major cities, populations well over a million, and we have more land than they have. So it translates into a very burdensome cost for our citizens to try to take care of all of this infrastructure. So by increasing the density, we can spread that cost a little bit more liberally, so to speak. And so tracking that density and reinventing and revitalizing our inner city neighborhoods is one of the key goals of the comprehensive plan.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the comprehensive plan. Now, Planet Tulsa had, I think, unprecedented citizen participation in many of the elements of the creation of the plan. It is in place, but is there any action on the comprehensive plan today?
Well, yes, there have been some positive things, the developments.
Give us a sense of what has happened in the comprehensive plan, according to the comprehensive plan, and what hasn't happened.
Well, the first thing, the comprehensive plan was the first one that had been done in like 30 years. So the zoning code that we have in place is still 30 years old for all practical purposes. There are changes made to it, from time to time on individual parcel applications where we change the plan. But the new comprehensive plan that came out of Planet Tulsa envisioned a new zoning code that would help deliver the implementation of the vision of that plan. So for the last 3 years, the city has been involved in a process to update the zoning code. A consultant has been hired, a very able consultant, and they've been working with city staff and a citizens advisory team to try to come up with a new zoning code that will actually implement the plan. So it's an ongoing process. A lot of people ask me about it because of my service on the Planning Commission in the past and the Transportation Advisory Board. What's going on with the update of the zoning code? Well, what's going on is a lot of hard work by a lot of individuals, and it seems like it's been taking an extraordinary long time to get it done. But the progress is being made, and very soon, possibly as early as next month, they will be introducing a draft to the public for review and public input. So that is a very positive step.
Is that the first major step that has to occur for things that are in the comprehensive plan to take place? Because, you know what, when I look at downtown development, you see a lot of those aspects built into it, the mixed use where you have retail on the bottom floor, offices above, the new buildings across from the BOK Center envision that. I think you're seeing some other things which have yet to be announced formally that are coming down the road that will do that same sort of thing.
Well, a central business district is a little bit different than the average neighborhood. Pretty much anything goes in the CBD. So we don't really need a lot of changes in the zoning code in order to encourage mixed-use development downtown. It's really in the neighborhoods and the outlying areas where it's most important. But, that doesn't mean that we couldn't use some additional guidelines for downtown development to try to help encourage the kinds of outcomes that we'd like to have. For instance, we have been awarded the Golden Crater Award by a national streets blog organization who's made note of our enormous amount of inventory of surface parking, which is really not very friendly to walk around and through and over and across. And it's like a desert of asphalt out there in many parts of downtown Tulsa. So I hope I've helped answer your question.
Yeah, that's something. That's the area around between 7th and 10th, Boston, and spreading out for a few blocks either direction.
The Tulsa Now and the Typros recently had the street cred event in that part of southern downtown Tulsa that is populated so much with the parking lots. And there was a competition to come up with some design opportunities and plans on how to re-envision and reimagine that part of Tulsa, and we hope that they get some legs. There were some great entries and some great ideas on how we can turn that around.
My guest today is Bill Leidy. He is the executive director of the Tulsa Smart Growth Coalition, a fairly new group that was formed earlier this spring, but they do have an interesting website with a lot of interesting essays on smart growth topics. And they'll also be a guest of Tulsa Now for their August meeting, August 6th at 6 o'clock. The Foolish Things Coffee Company, where they're going to do a presentation and talk about some smart growth principles. Well, what do you see as the most pressing smart growth principle we need to start changing here in Tulsa? Is it transportation? Is it, we talked about mixed use. It's one thing in the downtown area. It'd be another thing, say, at 31st and Harvard or someplace like that. You know what I'm saying? Will these smart growth principles sort of radiate from downtown, do you think?
I think that's the idea of the comprehensive plan, was to begin in the central city. And, I'm speaking personally on this issue and responding to your question. Yes, transportation is the key in my view. And Tulsa's public transit investments have been minuscule in comparison to other cities. We've fallen very far behind some of our cities that we compete with. And so it's a challenge to figure out how to invest and how to fund an expanded transit system. Oklahoma City has made some serious capital investments in their transit plan. They're going to be building a streetcar, and they're improving their bus service. And so we have the big challenge is, where's the money going to come from?
Yeah, this is the whole thing is when you go to another city where the buses are running every 10 to 15 minutes or even less in some big cities, how do they afford it? And why can't we afford it? Is it a matter of us not taking on the tax liability to make that happen?
I can't help and resist but to comment. I had an opportunity to go to London a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the first days that we were there, we left our hotel and there was a group of us going to go to Westminster. And so we were going to take the underground. So we arrived at our station. We went down the stairs. We got our tickets. We went down the stairs. Just as we got to the platform, a train took off. And I thought, oh, my, this is going to be really – I was, oh, here we go again. We're going to be a long wait. Well, it was about 3 minutes. Another train was there. So, you know, it really opened my eyes. In fact, all of the transit systems in Europe perform very well. And we have American cities that are doing a lot. Denver and Austin and Minneapolis have great public transit systems. New York City, of course, San Francisco, and more. Salt Lake, you know, is another one that's really building a public transit. So other cities are doing it. From what I understand, Tulsa is the largest city population-wise in the United States that does not have some form of dedicated funding for transit. So there's going to be resistance to that in Tulsa. It's a very conservative state, and people want a small government. But if we're going to really turn a corner, if we're going to appeal to millennials and the bright, young, talented, creative class that we'd like to attract to Tulsa that would help us attract new businesses and new industries to come here to take advantage of that talent in the workforce, then we're going to have to offer a considerably more responsive public transit system. And the city council, actually, and the mayor about a year ago signed a resolution stating that they would form a task force to study the best practices of other cities on funding and governance options for an expanded transit system. And why it hasn't really gotten off center yet, I don't know. Former Mayor Roger Randall has agreed in principle to chair the task force. Somebody with a lot of credibility, works at the University of Oklahoma, Tulsa, a guy who really understands a lot of these issues. And so, you know, we want to see that start up quickly and try to figure out how are we going to do this. So it's going to be a challenge, as I say.
Now, the city is proceeding with its first rapid bus transit line, which will be along the Peoria corridor. You're smiling sort of wryly. You don't think that's going
to
happen?
Well, I mean, it's been pushed back to where, from what I'm hearing, it's going to be 7 years before it's actually going to become operational. And according to what I'm being told, the reason for that is because of the added operational costs to run the system. The capital side has already been approved, about $15
right.
million. Dollars
yeah, we just voted on that.
Improve our Tulsa, which is not a huge amount of money, but this is about a 10-mile corridor that was highly studied.
And it serves both North Tulsa as well as South Tulsa.
Yes, very much so. It's the key. We talked in the Planet Tulsa about the Big T, which was intersecting north, south, east, west corridors, high-frequency transit corridors. And so this has been on the books, planning for quite a long time. And even now that we look like we are going to be getting the capital funds to build the transit stations and make improvements to the sidewalks and the connectivity around those stations because of the fact that they are having a hard time identifying where these funds are going to come from, an extra approximately $1 million a year to operate this high-frequency bus system. It's not really a bus rapid transit in the true sense of the term, because that typically is exclusive for where you have dedicated lanes for the buses, and we're not going to have that.
But you will go to a station system.
It will be a station, or you will be getting your tickets before you board, which will decrease the boarding time, and you will have platforms that are at the same grade level as the buses, and it's an exciting prospect. It's just there are a lot of people who are really anxious to see it come into fruition are pretty disappointed that it looks like it's going to be at the end of the next funding.
And when you talk with mass transit proponents, they constantly say any improvement you make in the transit system, once you put it in place and people can actually see it in operation, they go, oh, we want that.
Yeah.
I mean, whether it's light rail, whether it's bus rapid transit, whether it's streetcars, generally when people see them in operation, they say, why can't I have that in my neighborhood?
Well, the BRT has a separate brand, and it's quite different. A lot of people think that riding the bus is for transit-dependent only people. And you hear say, well, I would never ride the bus. Well, no, you wouldn't if you had to wait 55 minutes for it every time.
Exactly.
And if you missed it, then you were 2 hours to get to where you want to go.
But think about that for people who are bus dependent. I mean, their life and their whole life is gathered around when the bus comes by.
Rich, you are so right on here. And this is a thing that I think has been missing in our community. I don't believe that most of our elected officials really think of transit as a core service. And it really is. When 50% of your population does not drive, and I'm talking about children and seniors and people who are disabled and people who can't afford to own an automobile, so we spend all of this money, $700 million in our Improve Our Tulsa First Streets, $700 million. So what was the percentage of public transit there? Well, the $15 million was about it for the
I think there were some buses,
for
too.
The bus
there were some. There were some buses.
Transit. So, it's like a quarter of 1%, and it's just we've got to turn that around. We've got to start making more investments in a transit system and having better mobility options. Right now, it costs anywhere from $10,000 to $12,000 a year through national statistics to own an automobile, and many families own 3 or 4 automobiles. Well, if you had a really performing, efficient transit system, if you could do away with one of those automobiles or two, then you could spend that money on other things like better housing or education for your children or just so many other things. So it's a matter of trying to win the hearts and minds of some of our policymakers and elected officials to recognize public transit for what it really is. It is a core service that every community needs to appreciate.
Well, let me talk about one roadblock that I've noticed about smart growth in the last few years. We heard a lot of talk about smart growth, especially the last decade when we were seeing these huge oil spikes where, gasoline was going up by $1, $2 at a time. Mm-hmm. For these price spikes. And you heard a lot of talk about smart growth. Now, it seems like everything is about how we're producing more oil than we have in a generation, and we're going to be self-sufficient. And while the price is not going to get cheap, you're not going to be – I think most of the conventional wisdom is we're not going to see price spikes like that for another 10 years, 10, 15 years, depending on what happens in the world. Does that hurt smart growth's cause, the idea of that unpredictability of the future of petroleum in sort of changing this idea about how a city should operate?
When I was in college, I had a college roommate. His father worked for Pan Am Oil and Gas, and people were predicting then we were going to run out of energy in the 1960s. So, the doomsdayers have been predicting this for some time. I don't really know when the end is going to come, and I don't think anybody else does really either. I do believe in peak oil. I think that there is going to be we're going to crest the wave, and it's going to be downhill after that. And the crash is not going to be pretty. I mean, if we're not prepared for it, it's going to change everybody's life. I mean, considerably. I ask anybody out there, you want to look up Howard Kunstler or read his books or see some of his videos, he'll explain it to you pretty quickly. We can't just put our fingers in our ears and cover our eyes and think this is going to go away. It's just not going to happen. So we need to start preparing, we need to start planning, and we need to start making investments so that when that time does come, we'll be better prepared to handle it.
Well, at this point, is the coalition seeking new members? What is the goal of the coalition?
Well, the goal of the coalition is this. As a volunteer for the Planning Commission, 5 years service there, and 3+ years on the Transportation Advisory Board, I also served on, was appointed by Mayor Kathy Taylor to serve on the Land Use Task Force. I came in contact with a lot of groups and a lot of organizations who are out there fighting the good fight, trying to help turn things around in Tulsa and help make a difference in their city and help create a more livable, a healthier, you know, a more diverse, a more economically attractive environment for people to come and invest. And, you know, as sitting on the Planning Commission, too often those groups that were directly affected by a particular land use decision that might be before them were met with a very highly organized group of legal, you know, lawyers who come in and representing businesses. And so it was really difficult for neighborhood advocates and activists who don't have the money to hire a bunch of fancy lawyers to come in and plead their case. So I guess I was thinking that if we could join together, if we could unify our different organizations, and for each of them to have the support of other organizations who share some of the same values and some of the common principles that they have, that it might help give them each collectively a greater voice than they have individually. So we are seeking new organizations to come on board, as I say, and we are also looking for individuals to join our coalition. Our Facebook page is kind of our front door. It's being very ably managed. The images are what help people understand what the outcomes are that we're seeking. And when you just talk about data, it's not so interesting, and it's not so people aren't necessarily going to go read, you know, the all of the data and the statistics and everything else. But if they can see what a neighborhood looks like that has these features and these elements that make up a true mixed-use community, then it's a lot more appealing.
All right. And you can see more at where? What's the name?
Well, our website. It's smartgrowthtulsa.com. It's a WordPress blog. It's new. A lot of the content on there came as a result of some articles that I wrote for the Urban Tulsa Weekly that is no longer publishing. And but we are very aggressively seeking input from community leaders and others. I have before me right here a copy of an article that was in the newspaper in 1999 by the former reporter P.J. Lasek, who interviewed then-Mayor Susan Savage, and they were talking about smart growth then. Former Mayor Robert LaFortune also was quoted in that same article. So these are not new ideas or new principles. They've been around quite a long time. And so we just hope that people will visit the website. They'll go to our Facebook page and like it. We could use some volunteers. I mean, we need people to help, people who are social media savvy and people who are in the graphic arts and so on. So we're listening, and we're trying to figure out how we can best serve our members.
All right. Bill Leidy, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich.
Bill Leidy is the executive director of the Tulsa Smart Growth Coalition. If you'd like more information about the coalition, visit smartgrowthtulsa.com or visit them when they present a presentation to Tulsa Now Wednesday, August 6th at 6 o'clock at the Foolish Things Coffee Company. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent episodes, they're available to listen to online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org, and you can search through our archives to listen to some really old episodes as well. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.